Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
9:07 now. Courtney, is that Coke truck cleared up? Tim tells me off of Clearview, so that, thank goodness I got that cleared up. We're good to go. Thank you. We are going to go into the 9 o'clock hour here and talk to Zach Lehman, a curator of animal collections at the Audubon Insectarium. Talk about the snow and what effect it may have or may not have had on the insect population. How you doing, Zach?
I'm good. How are you?
How does one become curator of animal collections at the Audubon Insectarium?
Well, I guess if you're like most kids, you enjoy bugs, mm-hmm. and I never grew up, so I stuck with the bugs.
Good for you.
I have to ask you to pause for just one second. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm back.
You sure?
My timing wasn't good there, but I'm good now. And
you didn't have a roach crawling on you.
In cold weather too.
You didn't have a roach crawling on you or anything, did you?
No, I was parking, and they're doing construction at work, and the security person didn't know I was on the phone with you, so she was trying to tell me something, and I said, I can't do that. Well, I got important bug stuff to talk about.
You mentioned the name Tommy Tucker. That'll get you anywhere you need to be, my friend. I'll tell you. Matter of fact, I'm the causeway from henceforth will cross the Lake Tucker. I made that change myself too, but we'll announce that.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk about.
Wow, you got. I was going to say you've got a lot of influence.
It's just a self-imposed thing. Now we'll see what Google Maps thinks about it later. Let's talk about the insects and the cold. Did all of that snow kill off? Here's my best possible case. With all the inconvenience we had, Zach, it killed all the termites, all the roaches, and we don't have to worry about anything, and all the mosquitoes too. So we don't have to worry about anything. It's going to be a beautiful spring. Am I right?
I hope it'll be a beautiful spring. Mm. I do not think we are going to see a whole lot of reduction in pest numbers because of this weather. And I know that's not what a lot of people want to hear, mm-hmm. but the fact of the matter is that we are subtropical, which means that periodically, if you live here, you know this, we get a freeze, usually a light freeze, sometimes a hard freeze that may last a day or two. And because that's been the case for thousands upon thousands of years here, insects that are native to this area are adapted for it. Now, that's not to say that some of our introduced species that are tropical, that cannot get out of the cold weather, might not have died. But subterranean things like termites and ants that are going to be under soil or in wood are very well insulated from that cold, cold air and the wind associated with it. Things like mosquitoes, they will literally be motionless, sometimes even on the ground, and appear dead in cold weather. Insects are ectothermic. They do not create their own heat in their bodies like we mammals and birds do. So they can't be active when it's cold. But I will tell you, Tommy, that I was in a marsh in South Louisiana on Saturday morning, mm-hmm. and I was assaulted by mosquitoes. Hmm. So did you call anybody? No, I was out in the middle of the marsh enjoying nature, but even with all that cold weather
with the snow and everything else, there were still mosquitoes around.
That's my point. Yes, and you would find that most insects that have an egg stage or a pupa stage, if they live in a place where there is some significant cold winter weather, they'll pass through the winter as an egg or a pupa because that stage of life isn't actively trying to eat and grow like the larva or actively trying to find a mate and reproduce like the adult. So for all I know, these mosquitoes were already adults, enjoying some warm winter weather and just became dormant and then reactivated when it got a little bit warmer over the weekend. Or they were in a pupal stage in the first place, and once the cold weather passed, they came out as adults. Could have been either one.
Tell me about roaches.
Well, the American cockroach, which is the one that we see in and around our homes most often, is in fact African in origin and came here accidentally, probably on ships, a couple hundred years ago. There's a very similar species. It's the same size, but it's all one color. It doesn't have that sort of two-toned top to its thorax, called the smoky brown roach. And I do not know what their difference in cold tolerance is. And we have other roaches, by the way, but most of them are not household pests. So those two big ones that we tend to see a lot, my suspicion is that they would be in the crevices of the bark of trees or underneath leaf litter. And here again, once the snow falls, they are in fact insulated from the coldest of the air. Now, I saw pictures that looked like dead roaches that some people sent me during and after our little snowmageddon there. And whether those roaches were truly dead or might have had the snow thaw and the water get off of them and literally started crawling away, you know, just hours after all of that as they warmed up, I don't know. Now, I can tell you that any of your listeners could probably Google American cockroach freezing, and with those three words, probably find a lot of information about the exact cold tolerance of that species. But I do not know it off the top of my head.
Did you know the only natural predator, the only thing, the apex predator, a cockroach, is a Doc Martin? Did you know that?
Yeah. it's very specific that out of all the predatory shoes in the world, only the Doc Martin.
Doc Martin. That's the only thing that a cockroach is afraid of. But seriously, let's say, for example, and I want to ask you this, Zach, if cockroaches were to, because you know an ecosystem is a delicate balance, right? I don't know if you want to learn that in school. How it really did stick with me, that lesson, how you better not touch with this, because if you fool that, it fools with this, and then that changes that. If cockroaches were to disappear tomorrow, would that be a good thing or a bad thing for the ecosystem as a whole? Do cockroaches do anything good for anybody ever?
Yes, they do. Let me start by saying that I don't want roaches in my house any more than the next person does. But there are about 4,000 species of roaches in the world, and only 12 or so are adaptable enough to get into buildings and eat the kind of stuff that humans leave behind, leave out, or create on purpose or by accident, right? So this is a very good case of a few rotten apples spoiling the barrel. Most of the world's roaches are detritivores. They eat decaying plant matter. And so when wood falls to the ground, when leaves fall to the ground, and those things are dead, there are nutrients trapped in there. And any insect that starts to chew on that stuff and ultimately, you know, produces waste from it is releasing nitrogen, phosphorus, other compounds that are vital to healthy soil and plant growth. So if you don't have roaches and other decomposers, detritivores, in the environment, whether it's fields or forests or swamps, you lose a lot of the ability for nature to do what it's supposed to do, which is to move energy around. And in this case, it's the recycling of nutrients. Healthy soil is something that insects create a lot of, and we take it for granted, but we get our food and our oxygen from the plants that grow out of healthy soil. So aside from the fact that there are a lot of predators that rely on roaches up the food chain, including, you know, animals that we like to see even more than we like to see bugs, they actually do serve a purpose. And, Tommy, I get this question all the time. You know, what's the purpose of a flea? Why did nature make a mosquito? What's the point of roaches? And there's always numerically something significant. The biomass that insects make up, the sheer weight, means they're going to exert some influence on the environment. And whether that is being food for other things or helping the ecosystem in a larger sense and coincidentally benefiting our species, it's something to keep in mind. One more thing, if I may.
Allow you some latitude, but watch yourself.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. The question about pest insects is always centered around humans. And I don't think the mice sit in their den at night and have these discussions. Oh, why are there hawks? What's the purpose of a snake? Come on, really? I mean, we got a life to live here. So
That's an interesting perspective. It's true. We're so egocentric. We always look at it as, for example, mosquitoes. Tell me what purpose mosquitoes serve.
That was going to be the end of my little rant there.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
If an ecosystem is meant to keep all species in balance, it may be that as animals that can spread diseases that kill humans, the purpose of mosquitoes is to keep the human population in check. I'm not saying that from an anthropocentric, from a self-interested standpoint, I want mosquitoes to kill humans. Of course I don't. But that may be why they're here. Now, you could then take your cockroach question and say, well, what if all the mosquitoes disappeared? Wouldn't that be better? It might be better for us in the disease vector viewpoint, but mosquitoes are food for lots of other things. Some mosquitoes are pollinators of plants. Now, on balance, what does that mean for us? That's a longer discussion. But I would not wave a wand, if I had one, and make all the mosquitoes on Earth disappear, because I think it would be unwise.
I'm not trying to engage in or wax philosophic here, but when it comes to the world and just from the ecosystem standpoint, you could make an argument that if the planet is being destroyed by human beings, that would just be the ecosystem playing out, right? Where we got to the point, we evolved to the point where we could destroy ourselves.
There are a lot of people who believe that that's happening right now, and we're an interesting species in that we have the ability now, at least in our evolutionary history, to destroy the planet. We can do it now. I don't think that we had the technology or the numbers of our species on this planet to do it however many years ago you want to go back. Let's just say before 1800 would probably be a decent benchmark, I think. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that there's not a little bit more attention paid by us on a daily basis, myself included, to what we do and how it affects the health of the planet. There's certainly more concrete and asphalt and buildings and pollutants than I think any of us would want, but we've gotten to a stage where here we are. Now, that's a far piece from what we started with, which
was it is, but
what happens when it freezes in New Orleans?
No, but
the answer is the insects do okay.
That always philosophically kind of triggered my mind, where it's like, well, okay, it's not good, but we always look at it from our standpoint. Well, from your standpoint, you're destroying your habitat. Let's talk about geckos, if we can, real quick. I don't know if that's in your wheelhouse or not, but geckos used to freak me out, but now I just let them hang out in the house because I believe they serve a purpose as well. Do they not? Can they hurt me? Can a gecko hurt me being in the house?
A gecko cannot hurt you being in the house. Both of the species of geckos that we have in New Orleans, and they look very similar, are introduced species. And we haven't really talked a lot about introduced species, but by and large, you want an organism to stay in the place where nature put it originally. So when we move things around, we have disastrous consequences sometimes, like with kudzu and water hyacinth, to name a couple of plants that are problematic in our wetlands, or apple snails, to name another problematic wetland species. But so the geckos that we have are nocturnal and they eat insects. Was there something else around, or is there something else around that does what they do, that they're out competing? That is out of my wheelhouse. I will tell you that our zoo reptile curator, Robert, is a terrific source of information about this, and I would encourage you to get him on, too, for gecko and all other herpetological questions. But I would say that any organism out of place shouldn't be where it is. So by way of example, if you don't know what tallow trees are, and all you know is that none of our trees give us fall colors except this one. Oh, wait, this one. Oh, it gets pretty orange and yellow leaves. Well, that's all fine and good, and you may like it for that reason. But tallow does so many other bad things when you plop it down in South Louisiana that the bad outweighs the good. And so with the geckos, let's just say that our geckos eat lots and lots of mosquitoes. I don't know if they do or not. The point is they shouldn't be here. And I like them. I think geckos are fantastic little lizards, but, it's an animal out of place.
Well, I look at it akin to having a cat in a house to take care of mice.
Yeah. Some of our mice probably are introduced also. The cats, certainly. You know, domestication of cats is something that has spanned centuries and continents. So we may not be able to apply this introduced species thing as a blanket all over the place, because when we talk about domesticated animals, which we have in our homes or on farms for specific purposes, it's probably a different discussion.
Let's talk it real quick before I let you go. And I know you're not a the reptile guy, but when you talk about geckos, you're talking about they have the ones that are outside, right? That are the green and brown ones, and then there's those weird stripe looking ones that are inside, or that hang around the soffit and fascia eating mosquitoes.
Yeah, I think you have probably now in that last little question discussed two different types of lizards. So the anoles that are native to this area, the green anole, is a monochromatic lizard that can be all green or all ground. Brown, all green or all brown. And when the dewlap, that little skin flap under the throat comes out, it is solid pink.
Right.
The introduced anole that is physically just like it is always brown, and then it has a dorsal midline with a pattern. So basically, something right down the middle of its back is patterned with two different colors of brown and lots of different symmetrical little markings on it. And its dewlap is red and yellow. And that's called the brown anole. It used to be called the Cuban anole, and I think its name has changed.
And it's a lot faster, is it not?
I think so, yeah. I've certainly had trouble catching them. Yeah. And they're also more terrestrial. The other ones tend to be on plants a little bit more. The native ones tend to be better climbers. Now, the things that are up on around your light at night, those are geckos. And as I was saying earlier, we have two species of introduced geckos here, and they're built very differently. They have a fatter, shorter tail. They have wider, broader toes with special structures for climbing smooth surfaces, and a flatter, shorter nose, if you will. Their face isn't as long and narrow. So we've got two geckos and two lizards that are common in the middle of the city, only one of which is native to the area.
So if you see these things in the house, should you kill them or should you just put them outside?
I usually put them outside.
Yeah.
You know, I do like them, and they are here to stay. And I don't think that, one or two people who don't like geckos getting rid of them is going to make much of a dent in their population. And to my knowledge, the geckos that we have not wreaked havoc on our local ecosystem.
I went from hating them and being afraid of them to it's like, you know what? Go ahead, little fellas, eat whatever you eat. I'll leave you alone. You leave me alone, we're fine. Thank you. This has been very entertaining. Zach, I hope you come back.
Have me again. I'd love to come back. Thanks, Tommy.
And be careful crossing Lake Tucker if you cross the causeway. Zach Lehman, curator of animal collections at the Audubon Insectarium. Yesterday, we talked about a new study about parents and actually having a favored child. We're going to get some tips on parenting and avoiding that from our good friend, Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Pardon me, when we come back on WWL.